Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. All right, this half hour we're going to talk about minor league baseball. The State College Spikes for the second consecutive year will be in the New York Penn League playoffs. They'll take on Hudson Valley opening game tonight at Dutchess Stadium just across the Hudson River. And then come back for game two tomorrow night at 7:05. And if necessary, Medler Field, Lebron Park would host a game number three. And that would take place on Friday night. We're joined by the general manager of the and vice president of the State College Spikes, Jason Dombach. JD.
It's great being with you, Steve.
All right. Let's get to, first of all, how it played out in the season for State College. I'm talking about from your perspective in terms of how the summer went, how the dates went, how the crowds responded, what you felt worked for you this summer.
Well, overall, it was a terrific season. You know, I know we'll talk about what happened between the white lines later on, but, you know, from a business standpoint, we had an exceptionally good year. You know, crowds were up. We had some of our best numbers, you know, across the board. A lot of the metrics that we look at, obviously, in terms of season tickets and groups and mini plans and single game tickets, merchandise sales, concessions, every single number in every category was up this year. So, you know, it was a good summer for us. Obviously, weather, you know, is going to affect you anytime. And while it did affect us on certain nights, we did have one rain out. We had a number of games that were definitely affected by the weather. Overall, it was a strong year for us. And, you know, the strength of our staff is our sales team, and you know those guys did a great job increasing season tickets and groups, and making sure that we had pre-sale numbers that were very strong to combat any kind of weather issues that came up during the year. So overall, it was a good year. I think promotionally, we did some great things. We had some fun nights. You know, the Carlton night. We had 12 firework shows. The James Franklin bobblehead dolls last Thursday night. So overall, I was very thrilled with the season, and to have a team on the field that won its division by 12 and a half games and earned one of the top two seeds in the league was just really the cherry on top.
What did you learn from last year's playoff experience that can help you in marketing this year's playoff experience?
Well, we learned a lot. I mean, last year we knew nothing about the playoffs, and particularly in this market. And, you know, we learned a few things that I think are going to help us this year. You know, for one, you know, we learned that, you know, it's difficult to sell groups, and it's very difficult for those types of, you know, that category, you know, your church groups, your little league teams, you know, to be able to assemble on very short notice. So for us, it was really about attacking the pre-sale package sales, you know, and we were out ahead of it. 3 weeks before the season ended, so we had the luxury of having a large lead and being able to game plan. And so we had four-game playoff packs on sale for 3 weeks, a little bit longer than we did last year, and that certainly helped. And, you know, so that was probably the biggest thing, and it's very affordable, you know, as low as $16 for all four games in the playoffs, or all four potential games in the playoffs. But I think the biggest thing that we learned from last year is there's a lot of education that needs to take place when it comes to minor league baseball playoffs. We found that fans generally don't understand the scenarios, and it's not on them. It's on us to make sure that we are pushing it out there, and so they understand all of the scenarios. And, you know, this year was a little trickier because it was a situation where we didn't know our opponent. We didn't know when we would play until Monday afternoon. So that gave us less than 36 hours to until the series began to get things out and to get everything kind of organized. So we were that was a little different than last year when we knew we were going to be the number one seed overall and knew we were going to have, you know, the games 2 and 3 at home. This year we weren't sure. It went down to Monday. So I think the biggest thing we learned is that, you know, in most markets, and including this one, there's a lot of educating that needs to go on. Folks don't necessarily inherently understand how the playoffs in our league work. And so that's an ongoing process, and that's going to take time. This is only the second year we've ever made the playoffs, so we don't expect fans to understand that. that's our job to get that information out there.
Exactly. I know in the finale on Monday on Labor Day, you went up to Williamsport. Gabe Sinacopi and his group do a great job at Williamsport, a great job. How do you feel the strength of the league is right now in terms of the stability of the league? We know Jamestown's moving to Morgantown. We'll talk about that in a moment. But how is the overall feel for where this league stands now compared to even a few years ago?
I think the league's very strong, and it continues to make that shift to newer ballparks, and the modernization of minor league baseball is really evident in the New York Penn League. The minor league baseball, I think there's still a lot of folks that have the image of Bull Durham in their head when they think of minor league baseball.
Right.
But as you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. But in the New York Penn League, there certainly are those Bull Durham-type situations out there. You mentioned one in Jamestown, Batavia, Auburn. These are franchises that have been around and have had minor league baseball going back to the 30s and the 40s, and they have ballparks that haven't really changed much since then. Williamsport's a good example of that, too, although, as you mentioned, they do a tremendous job there, and they have modernized an older ballpark up at Bowman Field to some degree, so they've done a nice job there. But, in our league, those types of franchises really are finding it harder to fit in, and the economics just don't really work anymore for franchises that draw 700 or 800 fans a game. That's not good, and that's where Jamestown was at, and that's why they were forced to look elsewhere. And the move to Morgantown, which will take place for next year, can only strengthen the league. It's going to be a modern facility. Which means that they're going to draw fans. It's in a good market. They share a facility with a major college program like we do here in State College. So the league continues to grow, and I think in 10 years, you're going to see even more of a shift to the more modernization, and that's really emblematic of what's happening around minor league baseball. Most of the ballparks, almost 90% of ballparks around minor league baseball, have been built since 1990, and if you take the number of ballparks that have been built since 1999, or right around 2000, you're talking about 75%. So, I mean, you're talking a significant number of minor league franchises out of the 160 are playing in modern facilities now. And that's what the beauty of the New York Penn League is. You have the modern facilities, but you have kind of that turn back clock mentality in our league as well.
This used to be a league of, as you mentioned, Jamestown, Auburn, Oneata, Geneva, Utica, Batavia, Watertown, Elmira. That's what this league used to be. Now it's dramatically changed. The Jamestown to Morgantown thing, of course, shocked no one along the way. But as you said, they can do nothing but actually strengthen the profile of the league and get them into a market that can be fun for everyone.
Yeah, and I think what's fun about that move for those of us who enjoy the Spikes, whether you work for the Spikes or whether you're a fan of the team, that's going to be a good rivalry with us because we'll be one of their closer rivals. That'll be probably our second closest team that we'll go play, about 3 hours away.
Right.
And the similarities between the structure of the ballpark and the relationship with the university, that's going to be a fun thing. It's great for the league. There's no doubt about it. And, I have had the opportunity, as you have, to go to Morgantown. And actually, I went on behalf of the league a couple of years ago and attended an economic summit. And I was shocked by how vibrant that region of West Virginia is.
Right.
It's not the mentality a lot of people have of the state of West Virginia.
Exactly.
It's actually pretty progressive. There's big industry there. There's pharmaceutical. Of course, you have the natural resources industries and the Marcellus Shale. I mean, there's some money in that area, and it's going to make it for a very good franchise, and it fits the footprint. It fits a footprint where right now there aren't any affiliated minor league franchises, and it's good for the Pittsburgh Pirates because they'll have an affiliate, 90 miles away. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win for everybody involved.
We're with Jason Dombach, Vice President, General Manager of the State College Spikes. The Spikes will open the New York Penn League playoffs tonight at Dutchess Stadium against Hudson Valley at 6:35. Then tomorrow night, they are guaranteed a home game at Medlar Field, Lebrano Park at 7:05. And then, if necessary, Friday at 7:05 as well. And they have ticket packages on sale for all of that now. When you go to minor league baseball meetings, when you go to baseball meetings, JD, what's the feeling? Mark Emmert had made a misplaced statement about minor league baseball, which he immediately retracted. So let's be fair, you know, once he got a little more information about it. Is there a great feeling about minor league baseball at those meetings, considering the economic condition and the fact that minor league baseball is so affordable at this point?
Yeah, you know, the feeling generally in my 15 years, it really hasn't changed a lot in terms of we all know what we can bring to our local community.
Right.
I think in each of our 160 communities, you are the most fun, affordable family entertainment option, and that's the way we continue to position our industry. It's not about the baseball. It's about all the fun stuff. It's about the connection with the community. But I think, you know, the last couple of years, the shift has really been to how can we take this model, aggregate it together, and take minor league baseball as a brand to this level. And I think you're going to start to see over the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see minor league baseball trying to position itself to where it can start to go after some bigger dollars, you know, perhaps like on Madison Avenue, or to go after some major brands and increase sponsorship inventory, aggregating the 160 teams and the 42 million fans who attend minor league baseball games and turning that into something. You know, if you look at it right now, we're just 160 franchises. We operate, you know, in our own little areas. We do our own revenues, but we've never really pulled it together. And the greatest example that we've been shown is Major League Soccer.
Right.
You know, Major League Soccer right. doesn't draw anywhere near what we draw minor league baseball. But, you know, their sponsorship revenues are, you know, $30, $40 million a year. And obviously they've got a national television contract and soccer is growing, and that's important. But, you know, 42 million fans, that is more fans than any sport outside of Major League Baseball. It's more than the NFL. It's more than the NBA. We're not claiming to be those leagues, obviously. We're not. But there's power in number, and we've not done a great job of that as an industry capitalizing on that. So that is something, there's a new effort, there's a new head of marketing at Minor League Baseball, and I think you're going to see Minor League Baseball reinvented over the next 5 to 10 years to where, you know, hopefully it can position itself as number five, you know, list of, you know, who are the big sports out there. And Minor League Baseball definitely belongs because of the power in numbers.
State College as a market. I don't think people understand some of the dynamics. Tri-Cities in the playoffs, but they're part of the Albany-Schenectady-Troy market. Connecticut's in the playoffs. Well, Norwich, New London, near Hartford, okay? Population near Providence even, for goodness sakes. Then you have, obviously, Hudson Valley, okay? Suburban New York, near White Plains. Newburgh is a decent-sized market. That's just an example of the markets within your own league. I didn't even mention Lowell, which is suburban Boston and so forth. State College is actually one of the smaller markets in the New York Penn League. What challenge does it bring to you when it's a smaller market, especially in a college town where summer session is not as active as fall or spring?
Well, I think what we make up for in lack of population, we make up for in demographics. I mean, it's an area that is always looking for an entertainment. It has money to spend for the most part. You know, there are advantages that we have in this market. You know, I think particularly in State College itself, you know, you have a younger demo. You see younger families at the ballpark. You see that every single night.
Yes, I do.
And we also have a good business. You know, there are you know, a tremendous business community in central Pennsylvania. For a town, quote unquote, the size of State College, to have some real major players, you know, like an AccuWeather or Rex Energy,
right?
HRI, you know, these type of companies that you know are well known nationally and internationally, you know, having them in your backyard is a huge advantage. And so, you know, we've done a really good job, I think, in building those partnerships. And you have to do that. You have to get the sponsor dollars. You have to get the ticket dollars to survive. You know, we've done a relatively good job at that, and we want to continue to grow that and continue to make this a viable franchise, which I think we have, and our challenge is to continue to do so. But there's not a lot of margin for error, and that is what makes it difficult. And, you know, we've got to get out in hand-to-hand combat, build those partnerships, massage those relationships, and it's really important that we do so because, you know, the success of our franchise really depends on it.
And that's part of the branding part. Something, I'll be frank with you, maybe 10, 15 years ago I didn't understand, but had others drum into me the importance of the branding part of it. Do you now feel 9 seasons deep that the Spikes have established a brand in Central Pennsylvania?
Well, I definitely do, and I think we can always continue to strive to do better. I think that the one thing that I wasn't sure about before the Spikes began, you may have had these same questions and concerns, was, you know, how would this franchise fit in the DNA of this market? And I think we found that over the 9-plus years now of Spikes baseball, when you think about summertime in this area, you know, we hope that most people think of the Spikes near the top of their list when they're thinking of something to do. And our numbers reflect that people are doing that. Is it a 100% share? No. But I think you could probably walk down the street most times and 9 out of 10 people are going to know who the Spikes are. And that's pretty good. I think that's right up there with any market in the country. So, you know, from a branding standpoint, you know, we went into it the right way, I think, initially, and that was that we were going to be a community asset. We were going to open our doors at the ballpark to charities and nonprofits, and we were going to send our mascot to every event that we possibly could and get out and volunteer. And that's the kind of thing that pays off. And, You know, you can't just open the gates and play baseball and expect to be welcome. You know, you have to get out there and be proactive about it. I'm proud of the job that we've done. But again, we can always continue to strive to be better.
And now for the frightening question, you're always, you know, you're rarely looking back, you're always looking forward. Have you already started to think about how you want to handle the 10th year of the franchise, building around the 10th season?
Without question. We've already started to plan some things and look forward to unveiling that throughout the offseason. No question about it. It's going to be a neat benchmark, 10 years. That's hard to believe, man. I'm sure nobody looks at that more crooked than you do, Steve. It's hard to believe it's been that long. But, yeah, we'll have some fun things planned. But first things first, we want to win a New York Penn League championship. And if we can do that, boy, I'll tell you what, to combine, you know, a championship team and a celebration that we'll be able to do next year around our 10th year, I think that's a marketing person's dream. That'll make our job a lot easier, believe me.
And again, the Cardinals will be on board for 2 more years. In fact, virtually everybody, I think that's what everybody did, JD. Almost everybody went 2 years across the board from what you and I have been able to understand. So the 2-year deal is not unusual right now. Gabe was telling us on Monday that even the Phillies with the franchises they owned went 2 years. But what has it meant just that, you know, they have to supply the talent, but they also have to supply a relationship. What's it been like?
Well, that's what it is. You know, they've been able to provide us with terrific talent. And, you know, you can never guarantee a certain level of club at this level. I mean, it's so dependent on the major league draft. I mean, even your player development people, you know, they're not super involved in the draft process. So, you know, in some ways, the folks who mold the instruction and the talent evaluation in the Cardinals organization, you know, they're a lot of times the first time they're ever getting a chance to see certain players here in state college. So I think it speaks to the quality of scouting that the Cardinals have, the resources they put into it. They're not afraid to get involved in Latin America. They've done very well there, of course. Some really talented Latin American players here in state college, more so than probably you know, we've seen a lot of other organizations over the last, 10 years that we've been watching the New York Penn League. But, you know, the thing that I love most about the Cardinals, and you see this every day, it's just they're great people. You know, that's not saying anything about anyone else, but just it's great when you can have a winning product and you have just terrific people, our coaching staff,
right,
all the Cardinals people. We had Jason Isringhausen here mm-hmm. the last 4 days. He works for the Cardinals now. Willie right. McGee. You know, these are guys that obviously are well-known former major leaguers. Willie McGee's case, he's a Cardinals Hall of Famer. You know, and they're great people, and they're just fun. They make being at the ballpark a lot of fun, and they're very accessible to the fans, too. And I haven't had one bad experience at all with a player, a coach, a roving instructor. They're all just blown away by the support that we provide them here in State College, and very supportive of what we're trying to do to get butts in the seats and to market the franchise. So it's been a wonderful partnership.
Well, it starts tonight at Hudson Valley at 6:35. Then tomorrow night, Thursday night, 7:05, Medler Field, Lebrano Park, if necessary. Friday night, 7:05, Medler Field, Lebrano Park, and tickets are on sale for the State College Spikes. JD, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Okay, Steve, you have a good trip up to Hudson Valley. I'll see you Thursday.
We'll come back with more in a moment.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. News Radio 1070 WKOK. Shikalini back in action on Friday night. Looking forward to that. And also Penn State with the home opener with Akron coming up Saturday at noon. Jack and I will be on the air with Lauren Crispell, Roger Corey, Jeff Tarman, all beginning at 10:30 on Saturday. Kevin Asher game with the coach Dick Hoard on Friday night as Shikalimi has their home opener coming up after their dramatic win over Lewisburg, the other night at Mathewson Stadium. But the home opener for Shikalimi is coming up on Friday night, and that will be a 7 o'clock kickoff in the area. Looking forward to that. It's also NFL weekend. The Seahawks and the Packers kick off tomorrow night. How about that? And also, the Browns will take on the Steelers. We'll talk to Neil Kulong of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com in just a few moments. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. What's Kevin Herr driving this week? Well, K. Herr Esquire Incorporated is driving a Ford F-150. That's right, power, Kevin Herr, power. He's driving a Ford F-150, the best-selling truck in America and has been the best-selling truck for years. And now he's experiencing the power of a Ford F-150 and the dependability of a Ford F-150, with the dependability backed up by the great people at Sunbury Motors. That's right. The great sales staff there, they take great care of you. They understand your budget. They understand your needs. They also understand what vehicle to put you in that's going to fit the budget and the needs. And they're going to back it up with a service department that takes care of routine maintenance and anything complicated as well that's outstanding. And so ask them about the Ford F-150 that Kevin Herr is driving, that, by the way, also has an air-conditioned seat, I heard. True. Rumors. True. Well, that's what he's driving right now. So go in and say, you know what? I want to drive what Kevin Herr is driving. Just go in there. Tell them that. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here's the big problem that baseball has at this stage. And thanks to Jason Dombacher, who joined us in the last half hour. The NFL gets underway tomorrow night. And the NFL, no matter what, I don't care whether it's talking about Ray Rice's problem, he's going to miss the first two games, or Jim Irsay's suspension, or the Redskins' nickname. Even when they have problems, the NFL is still the king when it comes to the ability to draw an audience. Preseason games outdraw everything else. Preseason games, meaningless preseason games, are a huge draw across the National Football League. It's stunning, but it is true. They draw, and it's incredible how they do draw. And I find it remarkable what they do. Remarkable. And you have to give them a lot of credit for how, over the last five plus decades, they've been able to pull off this money tree phenomenon that even when they have a problem, it doesn't affect them. Now they're up to 45% of the audience being women. And even with the, I mean, I'm just going to see how the Ray Rice thing plays out, but that's been remarkable. And that's what's made it special. And we see that here at Penn State football. You don't draw 107,000 people if it's all absolute diehard, deep-rooted football fans. It has to be your ability to draw the casual fan. The NFL does that. And tomorrow night, the NFL is going to open up with Seattle, the defending Super Bowl champions, taking on the Green Bay Packers. And then the Steelers are going to open up on Sunday. They'll take on the Cleveland Browns. So it is opening weekend for the NFL. It's here. So you have high school. You're going to have the NFL tomorrow night, high school football Friday night, college football, including Penn State Akron at noon on Saturday, and you have a big one Saturday night between Michigan State and Oregon in Eugene at Autzen Stadium. And then Sunday you have the NFL, and Monday night you have the NFL. You have five consecutive days of football, NFL, high school, college, NFL, NFL. And the ratings are going to be great on all of them. Okay, the fans are going to come out in droves, and Shikellamy is going to be packed on Friday night. Here there's going to be a big crowd on Saturday as well when the Nittany Lions get into action to take on Akron home opener. A lot of buzz and excitement over that Central Florida win in Ireland. And now you have them coming home to play Akron in the home opener, James Franklin's initial Beaver Stadium game. So this is where football is right now. And baseball's in the thick of a pennant race, and it's going to take a back seat to it. And believe me, everyone knows, you can tell by the conversation I had with Jason Dalbach, how much I love baseball. Well, with all that, we bring in Neil Coulong from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com to talk about the Steelers. Merrill Reese, by the way, tomorrow to talk about the Eagles on the show. Neil, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be back, as always.
Well, here it is, opening week. Juices get to flow a bit. You got Brian Hoyer and the Browns coming in. Brian Hoyer and the Browns. That one some people thought maybe in June, but your thoughts on where the Steelers are at this point preseason, Neil, as opposed to last preseason when they went 0-4 and then started 0-4?
I had a bit more concern probably about last year's team just because I think there were holes that were readily obvious from their preseason action. There were more holes last season than there are this season, but there are still some there. I think they have a bit more of a fighting chance against Cleveland than they did against Tennessee. I think Tennessee last year at this point was a little bit better than where Cleveland is, and I'm being polite with that. I'm not sure. Cleveland is probably going to be one of the more one-dimensional opponents the Steelers will see all season. I don't really see them being able to threaten a whole lot in the passing game. They're really built to run the ball anyway, and that's a lot of what they're going to do. And teams, generally speaking, when they go into Pittsburgh that one-dimensionally, they tend to not do very well. I think Brian Hoyer is a better quarterback than Johnny Manziel. I wasn't surprised to hear that he was going to start. And if, in that, you're still not packing a whole lot of heat in that area of the game. I think the Steelers will be able to play in their base defense a bit more than in their nickel, and that's looked a lot better through their four preseason games. So I think it plays well into their strengths, but Cleveland also is a very good defensive team. I think they're going to do a lot better this season on that side of the ball than a lot of people think they will, and it'll be a tough game. I think it'll be competitive down to the end.
In fact, that was going to be my next question, was about the Cleveland defense. It just seems to me on the surface, Neil, that is the strength of that football team, that they'll keep them in every game. Yes or no on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly what they designed to do. I mean, they're in the process of a little bit of a rebuilding phase, and with that, you've really got to kind of, to mix sports metaphors here, you've got to kind of find your fastball and locate it, and that's really what they're doing with a defensive-minded coach and Mike Patton and the players they have on that side of the ball. That's really where the bulk of their talent is, and they're going to complement that with a ball control offense, the hope being, you know, there'll be games where we'll hold guys to 10, 13 points, and hopefully we can make a play or two in the offensive side and try to stay competitive with it as long as we can. But at the same time, the one game in which they don't have a very good and very favorable defensive matchup, they could, you know, stand to lose by, you know, three or four scores. Their offense really is going to be that limited. But on defense, I mean, Joe Hayden is, in my opinion anyway, one of the best, if not the best, all-around cornerbacks in the game.
Right.
And it really starts with him. You have a guy that can take away that much of the field and also can't be run on. You're going to, you know, find yourself in a fighting position if you can hold, you know, that outside edge and defend outside the numbers as well as he can. He's a great player, and in that, you know, they have a lot of talent overall, you know, throughout their defense. And it's a tough matchup for the Steelers. I know people, you know, really expect them to go in and just throttle them, but I think they're going to make themselves a competitive football team just because it's not going to be easy to score on them, and they're going to want to hold the ball. They're going to possess it and, you know, not get it back to, you know, the opposing offense, give them a chance to score. And typically in the NFL, if you have those two components, you're going to be a you know, fairly tough team to beat. You know, they may not be better than 6-10 this year, but, you know, they're going to lose some very close games.
Neil, was there any cut along the way the Steelers made that even was a mild surprise to you?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think, you know, with as intensely as we follow the team throughout training camp, and I don't want to say we make the players necessarily better than they really are. I mean, I think we just we raise it to the ceiling for what our expectations are coming out of training camp. And in that, you tend to get to talk about what we call the training camp heroes, the Isaac Redman Award winners from the past. We barely even remember who those guys are in a year, and there's a reason for that. It's because they're not, you know, generally speaking, all that great of players. They just they look good for us in a training camp environment. Along with that, I think if anything, you know, it might be mildly surprising with Shaquille Richardson getting cut, considering he was the second highest draft pick this season to have not made his team. But at the same time, he missed the second half of training camp in the last two, maybe even three preseason games with injury. So it's, you know, pretty tough to make the club from the tub, and especially if you're a fifth-round pick as opposed to, you know, fourth or a third. You're kind of on that fence. With that, you don't have the best chance in the world if you're not out on the field performing. And frankly, I didn't think he looked all that great anyway. I think he was more of a project, and I'm not out-and-out surprised that he was cut. But I'd say, you know, of anybody, he's probably more of the headliner.
The offensive line stayed together the entire preseason, Neil. Talk about what they are capable of accomplishing based on what you've seen.
I'm afraid to even mention their name. Something could go wrong. But
right.
the Steelers' philosophy of wrapping them in bubble tape before getting out on the field each of these games is working, and maybe we can attribute that to offensive line coach Mike Munchak. I mean, seriously speaking, that group looks a lot better than it did last season. I think they're already at a higher level than they were last year. Getting Pouncey back to that group obviously helps, but the five starters have all looked very good. And I think one thing we'll see come week one is how talented they are as a group. and there's not probably a whole lot of depth there, but I think they've done a great job playing together, and really we're going to see a vastly improved running game come Sunday. I mean, another thing too, they haven't really showcased the run game all that much throughout the preseason, you know, not with the ones playing against ones. They didn't get a ton of work. I thought the time that they were in there, I mean, I don't think there was a game you didn't see Le'Veon Bell, you know, have a carry of at least 6-7 yards, and he didn't get a ton of action throughout the preseason with the starting group. So there's definitely a lot to be optimistic about with that group, and you know, getting four quarters out there, even against a good run defense, I think we're really going to get an idea that the running game and the offensive line is going to be one of the biggest strengths of this team this year.
During the course of the preseason, you experiment with a few things here and there, and you don't really show a lot. What, in your opinion, what didn't they show that you expect to see from them? Something that's a Mike Tomlin Steelers staple that was barely shown in the preseason.
I think they're going to want to get the ball deep. You really saw Marcus Wheaton working on the timing with Ben Roethlisberger on the post corner route. I think they're going to see him look to get outside the numbers and run a few fly patterns as well. It's something Todd Haley has done at the beginning of each of the last couple seasons, and that was with Emmanuel Sanders. And then I think Wheaton might have a step on Sanders in terms of speed. And I'm curious if they don't want to, you know, soften up opposing defenses and really try to run out of that, you know, 11 personnel, get the three receivers out there, spread a team out a little bit and try to run inside with that zone. I think it's something that the team is really built to do, and exactly to the point of your question, I don't think they showed a whole lot of outside zone running. I can think of two carries off the top of my head, and that was both of them were with second team guys worked in. I think they're saving that one under their cap just to kind of break it out in the regular season, really show that that's something they've worked, you know, pretty intensely on throughout training camp and the preseason as well. Getting the ball deep, though, can only help that. And I don't recall outside of Martavis Bryant a few times down the field, usually with second team. I don't think they threw deep with Roethlisberger through those games, and that's something they're going to want to get established early in the season, just because they're going to look very much like a running football team when they get out there, and it's probably going to, you know, start with two tight ends from the first snap of the game, and from that try to work into their sub packages a little bit more and work that no huddle. And you know, you got to kind of show it. You got to show that you can that you're willing to do it, that you're able to do it. And Marcus Wheaton, I think, is going to be a recipient of one of those passes early in that game.
If the Steelers were opening with Green Bay, having a long, in-depth discussion on the capabilities of Aaron Rodgers would be apropos to the game because he's dynamic. Talking about Johnny Manziel, who's never quarterbacked an NFL game, is virtually irrelevant, which, of course, doesn't explain national radio the last 6 weeks. But are you interested at all in the possibility that both quarterbacks will play in the game?
I think there's some intrigue to it, and I agree with Coach Tomlin's comments today at his press conference. They're pretty much certain that he's going to get out on the field at some point. I mean, I think with the skill set that he has, I think he provides a good complement to what they're going to want to do offensively, and using that complement in, you know, kind of a meter dose probably benefits them. They want to run the football, and getting a guy like Manziel who's comfortable, you know, playing out a shotgun and getting him on the move a little bit to test that edge and, you know, force defenders to stay disciplined. It's a good way to really feel out the opponent to see what they're going to do in what situation. That really is going to open up their offense. So in that regard, I think it is somewhat interesting to know the Steelers are going to have to prepare for two quarterbacks and to whatever end you really, you know, sit down and study Johnny Manziel in the preseason. I don't necessarily think that's needed. But at the same time, knowing that that's going to be another factor of their running game, you know, getting him on something of a sprint option, it probably opens them up a little bit more to do what they want to do. They're really going to come run heavy. I wouldn't be surprised if they ran 40 times in the opener, just because they have, you know, many tools that can help them do that. But as far as Manziel, you know, getting under center and calling the same plays as Brian Hoyer, I don't think that's an option. I think they're going to, you know, want to use a specialty run heavy package when he's in there and really try to mix up the looks that they're giving them and test the Steelers, young and probably a little bit more athletic defense than they had last year. But you got to be able to see what they can do. And, pressuring a guy like Jarvis Jones, Ryan Shazier, into making a decision on a quarterback that can run, along with giving him a passing option over the top of that, I think is smart football. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see that, probably by the second quarter.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very, very much.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Neil Coulong, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. As the Steelers get ready to open the season with the Cleveland Browns, that'll be Sunday. Of course, when you look at the NFL, they're the king. And football's king in this country as well. Look at the next five nights after tonight. Baseball has everything to itself tonight. Tomorrow night, the Seahawks will take on the Packers. Friday night will be high school football, including the game you'll hear here, Shikellamy against in their home opener after their big win to start the season. They're trying to go 2-0. Penn State trying to go 2-0. They got Akron on Saturday. Long list of college football games coming up on Saturday, including Michigan State and Oregon. You got Michigan and Notre Dame as well. All right, that's all coming up. And then on Sunday, the NFL, a full lineup, except for the two Monday night games and, of course, tomorrow night's game. But other than that, you're going to have 13 games on Sunday in the NFL, including the Steelers and the Browns. And then on Monday night, you have two games. It's not just the NFL, it's football in general. And that's one of the reasons after going to Ireland at Croke Park, they want to bring that game over. They want to have that a game every year. They think it can gain some popularity over there. It's one of the reasons why the NFL continues to look at London as a market. I don't agree with them in terms of having a team play in London because of the travel logistics of always having to go back and forth, back and forth. It's one thing to do it once like Penn State did, but to have a team have to do it eight different times? And can you schedule it in such a way where you can get bye weeks and things like that? I mean, although I'll say this, the trip back to the U.S. was far, far, far easier. This team has some bounce and some hop and things like that. I'm not playing, but obviously I had to do it too. I can tell you, I felt great the entire time. I have no issue. I feel the same way today as I did 2 weeks ago. So I don't think it's an issue at all. All right, coming up tomorrow, Merrill Reese on the show. The voice, the outstanding, the signature voice of the Philadelphia Eagles is going to join us on the show tomorrow. We are looking forward to that. He's a treasure. Merrill is a treasure. And, of course, you hear the Eagles games on Eagle 107. It's all coming up tomorrow. Thanks to all our guests today. I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK.